Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray and Brad Williams for the About Last Night podcast. What a show today.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. I like doing these away episodes where we actually go to people's homes because I feel like we see them where they're comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, they're not here. They're not
they're in their habitat.
Yeah. They're not scared by your candles or Muppet posters.
Scared?
You know.
You mean inspired?
Well, that too. But it was a fun episode. Our guest today is Neil Brennan. And if for any reason you don't know the name, you certainly know the work.
Sure.
I mean, have you heard of this thing called Chappelle Show?
Yeah, just maybe the highest-selling TV show DVD of all time.
Yeah.
He's written for countless TV shows, wrote the movie Half-Baked with Dave Chappelle.
Right.
Which is a cult classic.
Absolutely.
He's written for the ESPYs, for late-night shows.
Yeah, the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
With Seth Meyers, that's right.
I mean, he wrote jokes. He wrote jokes knowing the most powerful man on the planet is going to be hearing those jokes.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fine line to walk.
And he just started stand-up. People think that he's been doing stand-up. His hour specials just came out on Comedy Central, Women and Black Dudes.
That's right.
Which is unbelievable. So you got to get it because he's obviously being a writer. People just think, oh, yeah, he's been doing stand-up because he's been in the comedy game forever. But he just started 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as you'll hear in the interview, I mean, stand-up is such a great beast of it's a very just profession where it's like you can't just because you've been a writer doesn't mean you're going to translate to being a great performer.
Adam and I, you and I have seen plenty of people that were writers that then went up on stage and the jokes didn't exactly translate
to the live
performance. Oh, absolutely. So, but the fact that he's good at both of them just speaks to who he is as a talent. And always a fun guy to hang out with.
Yeah, he's a great dude.
Whenever we see him at the clubs, and it was really cool to head over to his house and interview him, man.
Yeah, in Venice, which is always a great place to be because you're near the beach, and
it's just cool.
It's inspiring too because it's like, oh man, hopefully we get to be famous enough to where we can have a place near the beach.
Well, I tell you what, if plenty of people go to aboutlastnightpodcast.com and click on the Amazon banner and and buy maybe a jumbo jet, then maybe we can get
Amazon.
Yeah, then maybe we can get our mansion in Venice Beach. So do that so we can have the About Last Night Podcast mansion.
And of course, on aboutlastnightpodcast.com, in addition to the Amazon banner, where you should shop so you can kick us back a little bit of coin.
Mm-hmm.
All the episodes are there for you to stream. Bob Saget, Kevin Nealon, Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig,
Chris D'Elia,
Russell Peters that just came out, and we've got some amazing ones coming up. Obviously, you can get it on iTunes and Stitcher as well. Subscribe on iTunes, rate the goddamn podcast, put 5 stars on it. All that shit helps. Keep tweeting at us. And of course, follow us on Twitter at FunnyBrad, at Adam Ray Comedy. Brad, where are you going to be on the road coming up?
Well, let me tell our listeners where. In April 3rd through the 6th, I will be in Tampa Bay, Florida at the Improv in Tampa Bay. April 11th and 12th, I will be at Aces Comedy Club in Marietta, California. And April 17th through the 19th, I will be at the Improv in Pittsburgh, PA.
Ooh.
Going to Steel Town. I love that club.
Is that a nice place?
Yeah. It's a fun place. Great fans. Oh, yeah. And also April 1st, right? April 1st, I'm going to be at the Improv in Hollywood, California.
No, the Laugh Factory.
Oh, the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, yeah.
And also April 1st, I'm going to be at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, California.
Why?
Why? Because I'm going to be supporting my good buddy and podcast partner, Adam Ray, at his CD release party.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Pop-Tart Suicide.
Pop-Tart Suicide, now available
on iTunes. All the kids are talking about it.
They're all talking about it. It's all a rage on the Twitters and the Vines and the Instagrams.
Craig Ferguson said it.
He did.
Which was hilarious. I almost was like, that was enough for me doing stand-up on a show. I was like, I just want to hear him say the name of the album.
Right.
I'm really bummed out because now I do have an air date. My Ferguson appearance is April 10th. 12:35 a.m. CBS. The guest that day, Morgan Freeman.
Well, I wish I could tell you I didn't do the Craig Ferguson show with Adam Ray. I wish I could tell you that he didn't talk about Pop-Tart Suicide, but he did.
But we are very proud of our boy, Adam Ray. He's got his album, Pop-Tart Suicide, which you should all go get
on April 1st.
iTunes.
Thank you. April 1st at Laugh Factory. Brad will be there with Ron Funches. And Melissa Villasenor. It'll be a great night of comedy and buddies, and you get a free CD. So come out. 8 o'clock, Laugh Factory. You can hit me up online for tickets or buy them at laughfactory.com. I will be at the Big Sky Comedy Club in Missoula, Montana, April 3rd, 4th, 5th, And on April 9th, I'll be headlining the Irvine Improv. April 16th, the Madhouse Comedy Club in San Diego, California. And then, of course, April 21st through the 27th, Las Vegas, the Tropicana. Come on out. See my name in lights. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Right. I tell you what, that's going to be a good time. So plenty of chances to see both me and Adam all across this great land of ours. But who cares about that? Because right now...
Wait a minute. That's so great. That's the most patriotic thing I've ever heard you say.
Yeah.
That's the best. Across this great land of
across
ours.
Across this great land of
Dude,
ours.
That was great. If there's any
this
way we can edit
your
in...
Land. This land is my land.
Dude, if there could have been a silhouette of an eagle blowing in the wind behind you as you said that... That was great, though, man, because you know what? It is a great land of ours.
It is.
And it's a great podcast of ours.
It is a great podcast of ours, including this episode, which we know you're going to enjoy. So sit back and relax and listen to us talking with the one and only Neil Brennan.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Yeah. Oh, you talked to them?
Yeah. Because they were being loud and obnoxious when I first got
Well, it's just that one girl when I was on.
And this is the Venice. No, this is the Santa Monica show. Santa Monica show, and you do that show every Sunday.
Yes.
Did you start that just to be like?
I started it to fucking try new material, which
you do all the time.
I mean, I try, but it doesn't come every week. I'll say that, guys.
Well, you know what? Thanks for doing the podcast.
My pleasure. Okay.
But last night I hadn't heard anything that you did in. I think I saw you go up a couple weeks ago.
Maybe a couple of those bits are like 3 weeks old. But you know how it is with a bit. Once you know it works, you're like, all right, what else you got?
I'm good. Yeah.
Like, all right, that works. That fucking that killer bit works. Okay, great.
I've now mastered it.
Are you one of those guys that like after because your hour just came out? Women and Black Dudes. Which is amazing.
Thank you.
Big fan of it.
Well done, sir.
I saw you run at the Laugh Factory. I think I hosted that show when you ran at the Laugh Factory before you went to New Orleans.
Didn't do well, but you know, you get the idea.
Now, does that make you freak out if like it didn't go as well?
No, I mean, I knew going in that there was a pretty low ceiling on the potential of that crowd. So I was like, literally, let me just do it so I know what it sounds like.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, are you one of these guys that puts pressure on yourself to now that's out? That you're like,
I'm not going to go, like, I don't go on the road because of that. Like, people are like, you should go on the road and get, I'm like, I'm not going to go on the road. I don't have a new hour. When I have a new hour, I'll go out.
You also know that you're at the level where people are coming back because they're like, I want to see.
Yeah.
They're putting you in the group of guys who should be churning out more shit, right?
Yes. I'm in that group of guys who
you
are not meeting expectations. I guess so. But I don't know. The thing is like I tell people, it's like, oh, I'm not a genius. So let's be real about this. Like, hopefully I'll have another hour in 2 years.
Do you think guys like Louis have put sort of unreal expectations on?
Yeah,
on
when
the
I knew Louis was doing too much when Chris was like, the fuck is he doing? like he's doing too many shows. He's doing this like an hour every.
He comes out with a brand new special every year.
He did. I think he didn't last year or whatever, but I think he's taking a break. I am not that good. I'm not that prolific. Whether good is a whole other thing, but I'm not. I can't write as many jokes as Louis C.K.
No, but like you write on all, like you're a writer in the true sense of the form in that you write stand up, obviously written movies and TV shows and stuff. But then also you're. Twitter followers are insane. Like you're a very good joke writer on Twitter.
Yeah.
Is there like a mindset you get into to like, okay, I'm going to write a tweet. I'm going to write a stand up joke.
Sometimes if I haven't written a tweet in a while, I'll be like, I need a tweet.
Wow. We're at that point in the world. I need to tweet.
I need to do this. So
I need to people know I'm alive.
I
need to brush my teeth.
Soon people will, husbands and wives will, when they're telling their kids the story of how they met, it will involve the word podcast. Like, and then your father was hosting a podcast.
Oh, my God.
That was back in the day. You'd
right.
come over to someone's house with some recording equipment.
What?
And you'd, you know what I mean? Like, it'll
you mean
be,
the stuff that's in my brain now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. The chip that I slip into
you think
the back of my neck?
That's ever going to happen?
Yeah.
Chips. The show, is it going to come back?
I mean, I think it'll be...
Is the show Chips going to come back?
I think yeah. it'll be a thing... It'll almost be like a neck thing.
Let's just address, first of all,
that your dog is staring at me like an appetizer.
Just, yeah.
Well,
you're the first little person he's met, and he's handling it pretty well.
I'm quite impressed because I don't do well with big dogs.
Brett's track record Keith's with the, canines.
Keith is the sweetest guy in the world.
Yeah, I've been attacked by a pug before.
Have you really?
Oh yeah, like it was an aggressive pug on Sunset that just thought, "Hey, this town's only big enough for two tiny things."
No, I mean they
and, like
they
took have, me out.
Look, they have a point. That's all I'm saying.
How long have you lived in Venice? Your whole
3 years.
You love it?
Yeah, I do. I like it because I don't like living in Hollywood. Like I don't like living in. I don't like going to Starbucks or Coffee Bean and seeing a bunch of hungry hippos fucking going over the sides.
Sure. That's probably
and
true.
Framing their making beats.
Handing out CDs. There's rappers handing out CDs on the on the boardwalk.
Well, that's
maybe.
A whole other thing. Yo, my man, you like hip hop? And you're like, of course I do. I'm a right. white person. And that's when they get you.
And they're like, well, guess what I have?
And you're a motherfucker.
I've been making an album every week for the last 2 years.
I got one of those CDs in New York once, and literally six of the tracks were Jay-Z songs. And then one was a guy rapping over a beat that I think I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. And then it was just like he had turned down the lyrics to like a Virgin by Madonna and then put some beats over it.
So
sang over it. Yeah.
So he doesn't even have the instrumental version. He's got like Madonna light in the background.
Yeah.
Smart. It's one of those things where I know, Adam, you just released an album. I've got two albums out, and then you go to the boardwalk and some guy just hands you three and he's like, you got two albums, I got five albums out.
Well, again, they're taking, if you wanted to take the Get Into the Groove Madonna video and just green screen yourself into it, that's the equivalent of what they're doing. The greatest one of those was when Chappelle show was on the I remember going to 125th Street in Harlem in New York, and it was after season two. And they were already selling the season three bootleg.
Shut up.
And I was like, how is it? Because we haven't written it yet.
Yeah. So they were on the side of the road.
It was actually like one of Dave's specials
that
they just said was Chappelle's Show season three.
Wow. Brad and I were just talking about this. When Chappelle's Show was, I think it was at season one or maybe season, well, I was in college when that came out. So
right.
It was like
so
the
you
prime.
Must be pretty excited to meet me.
We're
Neil,
thrilled.
Huge.
I mean, this is a
fans.
And to be in your home.
Look, guys.
And it's not just a cool Venice home, because it's already cool to live in Venice, but even
it's actually a legitimately nice
your
house.
Your bathroom was an experience, man.
Yeah, it's an awesome bathroom.
How many times you walk in to pee and go,
this is fucking awesome.
Look at this place.
You ever do the Playboy
Why? What's in the bathroom?
Show?
I didn't do it. Yeah.
You ever do the Playboy show? In
Court Sold Show?
Court Show?
Yeah. The Palms.
The Palms, there's a Playboy club at the top of the Palms in the bathroom. They have
every cover, right?
They have all just naked women, and then there's like a glaze over it, and I took a picture of the glaze and sent it to my decorator.
Wow, must be nice.
Oh, it is. And he like did it, but he did it with like 80s
so
hip-hop
cool.
posters. And
you've also done it with fucking comics.
Yeah, he
here?
Did it.
Yeah.
That's the Watchmen, which I don't even never even read, but he put it he plastered it all over a pillar.
Right. So when comedy comes to a close for you,
right,
you're gonna decorate homes with
I had nothing to do with it. I mean, I just told him what I liked, but I didn't tell him.
Wow. See, now, does that come from like a childhood thing where you like decorated your room like this? Or is
what
it
are
just...
you saying? I'm a fake.
No, man, because I had Sesame Street
I just
painted
like,
on my wall.
I just like, you know, it's like I have a sensibility of, you know, I like what I like. I like faces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's a big ass face. I like goofy ass propaganda. But like, I like people. Like, I like faces. So I just wanted to have as many faces around as possible.
Also, it's your home. I'm sure after you get to a point where you're like, oh, I have a place that I'm going to be in all the time. You wanted to make it.
Yeah, yeah. I also just never, my place in New York didn't like lend itself to this. So this has been like, oh, and it was barren when I got it. Right. It was new. It was a new townhouse.
Where were you living when Chappelle's Show came out?
In New York.
Right.
And like had an apartment.
With Dave or no?
Yeah, we had bunk beds.
That's what we all dreamed about.
No, we were fucking 30.
Some people probably think that though.
You guys just idiots, imbeciles think that.
But you would probably. But I mean, 22-hour days editing.
Oh yeah, no, we had sleeping bags the first season, and then second season, there was no need for sleeping bags when you don't sleep.
Wow. So you really didn't. I heard you.
No, I really wouldn't sleep, and it would take, particularly between shooting. Like we'd have to shoot for 12 hours. And then the crew would be exhausted and go home. And then me and Dave had to go write. And it was just like
After
a day of shooting, we'd have to go write.
And that's an entire day, exhausting.
Yeah,
day.
And then once we were done shooting, then we'd have like 9 sketches just footage.
Right.
So then generally I would edit it all in time for the live part.
Right.
And it was like literally delivering tapes broadcast news where you're like
running.
Yeah, put it. I swear to God.
Wow.
Like the first episode, the thing where Dave looks at the girl's titty. Like there's a thing
thing. They freeze frame Dave. Yes. Look at my face right here.
Yes.
Amazing.
I found it that day.
Holy
in
shit.
Editing. And I was like, oh, we should do this on the show. And then I literally was like, texted him like, hey, there's a thing where you're looking at the girl's titty, we should maybe just do it and see if it works. And then so
do you realize how often we talked about that after that show came out in college,
that sketch? Yeah. Or that
moment,
right? Oh no, well that was a cool moment because it was like, this show is stupid. Like this show is run by imbeciles. And we are going to pause a sketch. We're going to show you a blooper immediately.
Right. There won't be a special like at the end.
That was like a cold open, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a cold open. Then Dave comes out and was like, hey, you want to see a blooper from that? Which I never even put together until just now. Like, that's no way to operate a television show.
No, they usually save that until the last episode of the season.
Now, how early on, I mean, from the get-go, did you say, all right, we're going to kind of like trust ourselves that to stop a show and do a moment like that is going to be funny, or were you trepidations?
Yeah, we were just like literally like whatever we wanted to do.
Yeah,
like I remember telling the pilot, which wasn't very good, like because we did a thing where Dave came out to like a crowd and was like, you know, like, you know, like whooping it up. Mm-hmm. And then he walked into the crowd. It was like our like an Arsenio sort of like triangle, like fucking raised whatever auditorium crowd. And then he's like in the crowd and slapping hands. Then he walks to the top and literally just walks out of the theater. and then basically like walks out. He's like, are you sick of that shit? That like fucking, that like Montel standing over and shit.
Yeah.
Or like before you said one word. So then the rest of the show was just him setting sketches up to camera. But the problem was, so we watched it and it was like, eh. So there's no laughs. And then we're like, eh. Comedy's not that much fun without laughs. So. Yeah. So then we redid the pilot, and then I remember when we got picked up, and I was talking to like the crew, and I was like, "Yeah, I want to do like Dave will be sitting in the audience, and we'll say Dave Chappelle, come on down, and then he'll run. We'll play the theme song, and he'll run on stage. And I remember the director looked at me like, "You're an idiot." And then we did it on the 5th episode, and it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember them looking at me like, you're in it. I remember the director of the live part, because I would direct a lot of the sketches. I'd be on headset, and then he'd be in the booth, and I could hear, one time I heard him going, what are they doing?
Oh, my God. But you can't listen to that, right? You just have to trust fully.
No, I it became a joke between me and Dave where we'd be like, what are they doing?
Because
it's like, I don't know, a good thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Original comedy.
They just know how they like shit. It's like, we don't care. Like, I literally didn't know how, like, we didn't do rehearsal. Like, it was just like, blocking?
Right.
Dave would just show up and go. Dave's whole thing was like, okay, I'm going to come out and then just point all the cameras at me. Yeah. Which is like...
But he was so good live with the audience, right?
Yeah. And it's also like... We were sort of dicks about it. Just like, just point him fucking Dave. I mean, need to reset. You need to do a jib in. You need to reset the jib arm. You need to like do little pushes. You need to do shit. But in essence, you don't need all of the... Like a lot of times they'll have a script... They'll do like a rehearse, like the Grammys, for instance, is live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they know what the performers are going to do.
Right.
So then they'll literally map out the
camera shots,
before they even, and they'll go one, take one, go camera three, take three. And then so it's like the director's doing that, and then there's like a technical director on his left pushing the buttons. Like just the way they do it's stupid, I think.
Yeah.
And we didn't know about it, and we also didn't care.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that you're looking back on it and knowing what you know about making television, do you look at yourself at that age and go, holy fuck, we were crazy, or...
No, I still think it's the way to do it. When shit gets too professional, I get uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, and there's something to be said.
It doesn't get funnier.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to get funnier when the guy who's directed a couple episodes of a TV drama goes, well, you know, it will be good.
Yeah, exactly. It's also like even – it's not going to get funnier by like mapping out shots or any of that. I mean, it does when you're shooting a sketch. You need to have the shit mapped out. Mm-hmm. But like there's also – a lot to be said for just like, what's you going to do? Yeah. Okay.
There's just doing it, right? And not overthinking. Same thing with editing, I'm sure. Like, I mean, when you would spend entire nights and you get, I mean, on a smaller scale, like anytime I would do work at Funny or Die for a little bit and would do sketches and I would edit, and sometimes I would spend, and obviously everything comes together in the editing room. But like sometimes I would just probably over edit, and like we had to stop ourselves and be like, maybe your first instinct was right, and like back and rewatching, and then trying to cut down for time is imperative as far as like, you know, and picking the funniest parts. But then you'd go back and I'd watch them and go, you know, maybe that's not so funny. My buddy's like, well, you just watched it 1,000 times.
That's why it's not funny.
Well, the best way is to show it to people.
Yeah.
And whatever
you guys would screen the sketches, right?
Yeah, we'd show them at Caroline's.
You say you did that with Rick James, and that. The cocaine you heard when people laughed.
Oh, that was we actually screened that at the taping because I was like not done. And I was just like, here's a version. I was like, it's not done. We can show it though. And it wasn't, it like did medium, did like C+.
And you take notes on like.
It was just like, okay, that works. Cocaine's a hell of a drug. Kept getting a laugh. So it was like, all right, we'll lay a bunch of those in. But we didn't really show it. I remember showing it to, I think maybe, it was, you just kind of got the feeling like, oh, this is going to be, you could just tell what a hot sketch is going to be before we'd air. Right. Like, oh, because just people be like, we'd show it to like, you know, Dave's security guy or whatever. Or just like.
people that are going to be watching, not like
the
comics.
Like, no, we never show it to comics. Like, show it to like the staff and then they'd be like. Whatever ones they wanted to see again, you go, oh, okay, that's a good sketch.
Sure.
But you have no one they go, that, you know what was funny?
Yeah.
The best was Dave's wife was at a restaurant after the Rick James taping, and she heard people at a restaurant say, I'm Rick James, bitch. And it hadn't aired yet.
It hadn't aired yet?
No, it hadn't aired. They had just been at the taping and were saying,
and they were already doing that.
Yeah, they were already doing that.
I'm sure when she comes back and tells that to you, you're like, okay, I think we got something.
I just thought, again, I say this fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was weird. I never understood. Like, I remember someone going, hey, I was just in Vegas, and someone at the blackjack table yelled, I'm Rick James, bitch. And I was like, and I was just working all the time. I was like, why would they do that? Why would they do that?
Right, because you guys didn't. I mean, you're just trying to set out and make a good product.
There was no time to celebrate. There was no time to celebrate. There was literally Donnell and Charlie got more ass than me and Dave. Like, it was like, there was no time to.
It's a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah,
we gotta write next week's episode.
It was just worrying about writing more. It was never like. It was just worrying about writing more.
Is that a blessing and a curse to be a part of a hit show like that where you do have no time? Because as soon as season one got so popular, your expectations are higher, but also the workload for you and Dave.
Yeah.
Because you're so involved.
Yeah, but like it wasn't that. Season one.
Could you sit back and enjoy it?
Pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
And then season two, we were like, oh, that was like, we figured out how to do the show.
late in season one, like what sketches work, what sketches don't work. So then the second season was more like, okay, like we just knew more shit. So we were just able to write more good sketches.
Season two is where everyone in my fraternity at USC would sit down and watch it on Wednesday. Like fucking 100 dudes. Yeah. It was, I can't remember the last time I sat down and was like, hey, tonight I do this, regardless of whatever. And a show, like in the 60s. I mean, like, and now there's no, an event is what I'm trying to say.
No, I know. Yeah. It was before YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's really thing, says.
You forget, it's like, it was before that. Like nothing was before YouTube. Like my neighbor, literally right there. The you can see her house. You know what she wrote? E.T. And you go, nobody wrote E.T.
No, it was just she always there. It. No, she wrote it.
She that lady wrote
That's
it.
Insane. Are you kidding me?
Melissa Matheson's her name. She's married to Harrison Ford. Like she wrote it.
Is kind of like, she over there?
Does
about?
She want to come by?
Yeah. Like. It's like that where you go like no one.
Yeah, you don't have the luxury of your sketches like with Fallon right now, crushing it right with the Tonight Show. And a big part of that is that his video
viral stuff the next day.
They put it online. Yeah. You guys, being successful.
You had to buy the DVD,
but that also shows how good the show was because Comedy Central reran the fuck out of it.
Yeah, they still rerun it.
But we still wanted you had to see that first that live episode you were able to quote the sketches the next day.
Is it sad that I missed that time?
Social pariah.
Like seeing it for the first time, like live, knowing that like instead of the next day I'll see it on Hulu. Like there's a
I think it's like that with a couple shows now, like Scandal, shit like that. Like
but like missing the time of sitting down and like knowing that like I'm getting to see the sketch for the first time, and so is everybody.
Right.
Yeah. I'm gonna take your word for it because what was interesting, like from the inside out point of view, was like we write the sketches and think like, okay, that's funny, but I should write it. And you go, that'll work, and then we'd shoot them, and we'd be like, okay, and then you'd edit them and be like, I have no idea if this is funny at all.
Well,
and
by that time you've also seen it.
And then by the time we'd show it to people, you go like, oh, and it's like a month and a half after you've written it, you're like, oh, right. So you forget why it's funny, and then we'd show to Caroline's or at the taping, and it'd be like, okay, that makes sense that it's funny.
Is there a big thought process that goes in before, like, you've got great New York boobs versus the white supremacist sketch? Like, or is New York boobs just like...
New York boobs was like... the white supremacist was like Dave's grandfather. The New York boobs thing was like me
so funny.
And a buddy of mine... used to call there's a day in the spring in New York where girls basically like unveil Unleash. Their boobs and it's like it was a joke between me and a buddy of mine
springtime time
like
time
it was
the boobs
one of those things where Chappelle knew that and then he was like he was doing the sketch for me or something. I was like, what are you? It was fucking hilarious. It was like, okay.
It's one of my favorite things ever.
He's like, I'll just
show.
Walk around and say you have great New York boobs. Like, I was like, okay.
Also because it was like, it was like a man on the street-esque.
Yeah.
But just him putting on a stash and a goofy, barber hat.
Yeah.
Was enough to make it go, oh, this is still like a sketch.
Yeah. And him going like, hi. Yeah,
the voice.
It was such a fucking weird. And then I remember the guy was like, that's my daughter. And he's like, sir.
And then he found that really just like heavy set, kind of gargoyle looking older, like Russian woman. And she just had giant saggy tits. And he put it like right on there. It was just like, and she smiled and was all about it. And that's how it closed. And it was like, great. Because then it was affable at that point. People
It was not, people were not mad about it. It's a compliment.
There was a moment, and I don't know if you got this a lot, but I looked you up when the show was going on, and I was shocked to find out that you were a white guy. Like, shocked. I was like, how does he get it that well?
I don't know. I mean, it's not like I don't really have a black name, so I think most people assumed.
Neil.
Yeah. Neil Brennan.
Not too many black Neils.
Yeah.
By the way, that's your
white,
next.
Was a white guy. And then also Dave would mention me sometimes on the show.
Right.
So it was like they knew. I think some people knew. Most people knew. I also think most people think that Dave makes it up. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think if there's a show, you don't go. You know, when you watch Fallon, even as a comedian, you don't go like, I wonder who wrote that. You just go like, he's making this up.
Right.
That's the mastery. That's the magic of television. Where you're like, this guy, this is all off the top of his head.
Genius.
Yeah.
When you grew up, and you were one of 10 kids, right?
Uh-huh.
The youngest.
Yes.
How do you get noticed as a kid?
You create a big TV show. It's the only way.
You create something that makes your siblings hit you up for money.
Yeah, it's the only possible way. No, the great thing about my family was that my brother used to keep track of who the richest Brennan was until I started winning. He was like, "This is stupid."
and your brother, who is
my brother, is a comedian named Kevin Brennan, who's fucking really funny.
Is he the reason you got into stand up?
Yeah, I used to go when I was in high school. It was in Philly, and I used to go visit him in New York. And he was basically, I guess it was like an open. He wasn't an open micer. Maybe he was an open micer. I remember going. I was in high school. I guess he was an open him. And Dave Attell was his best friend. They worked the door at the Improv.
Nice.
So I went to lunch with Attell, my brother, and Mike Royce, who has like ran Raymond and ran like run a bunch of shows. And it was like, oh yeah, you can be in com. And this guy Dave Juskow is a fucking hilarious dude. And it was like, oh okay, so you just hang out and you fuck around with your friends.
Yeah, there's a point when you don't realize that like being funny is like a job and you can
Also just like, oh, this is awesome. It was so much better than living with my parents.
Now, did you have an interest in comedy at that point, or are you just going to hang out with your
funny
brother?
I was funny and I thought like, all right, I was funny and I felt like maybe I'll do something in comedy.
Now, how were you with your, like I heard you say this on another podcast that like you were funny with your friends, and I'm always curious, cause, like for me being funny with my friends was I was a good storyteller, and I would impersonate teachers and friends,
right,
and Ace Ventura, and that's how I started to on the bus.
What's hilarious
every morning.
Is like what was like a high school movie for most people is like Ace Ventura. It's like, oh, I remember when that opened. Like I lived out here, and I remember thinking like, I wonder if Jim Carrey's going to be a movie star. Like,
what did you think?
I had no idea. I didn't think so, but then it started. I heard it was going to do well. I was like, all right,
yeah.
But yeah, like I was funny.
Like what would you? Yeah, like funny one-liners.
I wasn't like stunty funny. I was just like a wise ass, I guess.
Yeah,
right.
But what was funny about from hanging out with my brother and his and Attell and those guys, like if we had a joke, me and my buddies, I'd be like, I wrote that. And they'd be like, No, I fucking wrote that. Like there was like a there was
yeah,
like,
well, it's all
a,
that like, thing where you're all hanging
a
out.
Bit, there was like it was like a very professional group of friends
right.
who were arguing about who wrote what.
That's hilarious.
And then did you have a desire to go up on stage right away, or were you like, no, I'm going to be the behind the scenes guy?
Like sort of and sort of not. Like I sort of did, but I got into film school because that was the thing. Like when I was in high school, like Do the Right Thing came out, and I was like, and then Spike Lee was doing a bunch of press and he went to NYU and I was like, NYU. And then like, it turns out Woody Allen went there and Scorsese and
you're thinking, huh, that sounds good.
I was like, oh, I should fucking go there.
Did you have to make a film to get
it? Yeah, I had to make a film, but I'd made a film junior year that was like relatively funny. And, but I wasn't a good student especially.
Right.
And I didn't do well in my SAT.
Most really creative types aren't, are they?
Like, yes and no. Yeah. Like there's like the
Lisa Kudrow.
You either
like
went to Harvard or you were like a C student or like a B student.
Right, that was me.
Yeah.
Like I worked really hard to understand the quadratic formula in math, and then I got to a point where I was like, I'm never gonna fucking need this.
I still, right. I'm not kidding. Probably once a month, I think I failed Spanish my senior year.
You think?
But I'd already gotten into NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the Spanish teacher was like an actress on the side.
I'm like,
and I was
a Spanish
like,
novella?
You know, I'm going to film school. I could break you off. But I swear to God, I have probably once a month, I have a nightmare where I failed Spanish and I had to stay. I couldn't go to NYU. Like,
you serious?
Yeah. Wow. My body doesn't really know what year it is where I'll be like, wait, I'll be walking around New York sometimes. And I'll be like, did we write Half Baked yet? What's happening? Like, I'll just, it's weird.
The film school, you only did a year of it, and then you were like,
yeah, and then I dropped out to work at Comedy Club, work the door, which was a $235 a week job, which, to put that in today's terms, it was $235.
And you're getting inspired watching all these great dudes.
Yeah, it's like Louis seen everyone and John come in. Stewart and Attell and Chappelle and Jay Moore. And,
is that where you met Chappelle, was at the Comedy Club?
At the Comedy Club.
So Dave was in your group of guys that you like started doing stand up with?
I didn't start doing stand up back. I did it once back then and was like awful.
But you saw him and you were like, oh, we should.
I saw him and I just was like, we should be friends.
Yeah.
That guy. And then we ended up having like a lot in common. And
that's how the best shit. A teacher told me at SC once, he was like, don't ever try to network for the sake of networking. He's like, be a cool person.
Be
if you
cool.
go golfing
yeah, exactly.
with somebody and then, oh, you'll find out they run HBO.
Yeah. But,
and then all of a sudden they want to be in business with you because they're like, oh, he didn't try to network out of the gate. And he's also just a cool person.
Also, you're going to, and I still get jobs from hanging out at comedy clubs. Pretty much every job I've ever gotten was from hanging out at comedy. It's like,
that's weird.
The first jobs I got it's a long story, but I was working for a cast director in an office for, I met her in New York. She was looking for people and I ended up moving out here and worked for her. And we were casting Singled Out. Then they needed a writer. I became a writer. I became the writer's assistant, but there were no writers. So I was like, paid like a writer's assistant, but I was actually a writer.
Wow.
Then after that, next door to that was All That, was also sharing the office. So I started talking to those guys.
One of the most underrated shows of all time, by the way.
Yeah. I ended up working there. And then and then I worked on another dating game show. Then I wrote Half Baked with Dave. Mm-hmm. So this is all from a comedy club, and then I wrote like movie again, but and then based on Half Baked, then I got to pitch other movies, sold those movies, and then did Chappelle Show. After that, pitched a movie with Tracy Morgan, who I knew from comedy clubs,
to Will Ferrell and Adam McKay.
To Will and Adam, they didn't buy the movie, but they thought it was funny. The goods came up. Then those guys hired me to direct the goods. And then since then, it's been...
How does your Seth Meyers relationship come into play there?
Oh, I know Seth not through comedy. I know Seth through this guy, Mike Schur, who I met. I started writing with after Half Baked.
Right.
Mm. But it's like Schumer, I know through comedy clubs.
It's just
like,
hanging out comedy clubs.
Chris Rock, I've been working with lately, and I literally know him from the Comedy Cellar.
Well, yeah.
He knew who I was, but we're friends on Facebook, and Rock is always on Facebook. It's the fucking creepiest.
You're on Facebook a lot.
No, I'm not. Oh, okay. I have a thing
guy, right?
Where my tweets go to Facebook and YouTube.
Right.
Facebook and Twitter. So Rock, I swear to God, only knows I'm funny from Facebook. Because my tweets go to Facebook, and Rock sometimes will write, like, funny.
Holy shit.
And then we've been working.
Chris Rock likes this.
Yeah, no, exactly. So
that's nuts.
He says he goes on Facebook because he's on Facebook because, first of all, because he feels old. But second of all, because he's like, because if I write happy birthday on my cousin's wall, he's like, that means a lot.
Good for him to know that, by the way.
Yeah. Rock's the smartest dude in the world.
Wait, so he would see you at comedy clubs, because that's a really interesting point, that like you can be, you know, friends with somebody, and then like once you see them do something that is, you're in the same
comedy field
as,
doesn't, people, if you, the thing I always tell people is, if I tell you, hey, you got to meet this guy, he's really funny, in the back of your mind, you're going to go, we'll see.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
So with comedy, unless they see you be funny, they don't believe
it. On their own accord, right?
More people know I'm funny from Twitter than anything. Well, meaning they wouldn't go, because they don't know what I wrote on Chappelle Show. They don't even know what writing is, for the most part. They don't know what directing is. They don't know anything.
They need to see it for themselves.
Know. Or stand up. They go, oh, you're really funny.
You're actually good at this.
The way they say it is so condescending. It's like, you didn't want to give me the benefit of the doubt prior to that.
Right.
But they just don't know.
Well, writing is so behind the scenes for everything you've done. So it's like, not, it took you to get in front of the camera for people to go or on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which you even said last night at your show, which you were like, people think you've been doing stand-up the whole time. because they're just like, you've been in the comedy game, so you've always been able to do that skill set. And it's like,
yeah, but again, it's not writing, doing stand-up is not like, hey, fucking I came out of the chute doing being able to do this. It's like, no, you have to learn how to do stand-up.
You have to do it.
And the only way you can learn is by doing it and not being that good.
I love that part about stand-up comedy, that there is no fast track.
Can't cheat it. There are some people that are more accelerated than others, but you can't.
Based on past experiences, maybe they did a show.
Or just natural ability. Like, Dave was great when he was like 4 years in.
Do you remember the first time you saw him do stand-up?
I don't. Okay. But, I mean, my brother, Kevin, still says Chappelle's the best comedian he's ever seen in person.
That's a pretty hard fact to argue against. Yeah.
I mean, my brother said something interesting, which is when Chappelle is on, the entire crowd laughs. He's like, not 3/4 of the crowd,
right?
Not 7/8, crowd
not
laughs.
Not one race, like, just everyone.
Yeah, like there's no area, there's no dead zones when he's on. Which is I thought about it a couple times. I'm like, yeah, it's true.
I forget what comic told me this, but they told me that stand-up comedy is a lot like music, and you have to tune into the audience to see like what they're into. And he said,
Kenny G told you that.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And he said, Chappelle is jazz. Like, he's up there, he's freestyling, but he gets everyone tuned in to his level.
Yeah, the thing about Dave is he went to art school. He was in high school, he went to the School of Performing Arts, like Fame. Like Debbie Allen went there. Fame is based on the high school I went to. Yeah. So he's been in plays and shit. He was in plays when in high school. And
I want to see that footage so bad. Of
and
him
he's
in
like
the woods.
Good. He would do shit that he would tell me like, hey, he goes, you know how sometimes I'll put a cigarette in my mouth, go to light it, and then keep talking, and then take the lighter up, then keep talking. He's like, that's I'm manipulating the audience. Like, he's got a ton of tricks.
Holy
like that.
Shit.
Like shit like that where you just go, oh, it's natural. It's natural, but he's also really
extremely calculated.
Yeah, completely calculated.
Ron White has just about every sip of his scotch planned.
I believe that.
In his act. Like, this enhances the punchline here.
Yep. Yeah.
You're making me think of times when I've seen him pop into the Comedy Store at 1 a.m. and do 2 hours, and where everybody stays, and he might even like flatline with no material for 10 minutes where he's just talking or talking to Jeff Ross, who's there, or Jeff Scott on the keyboards or whatever. Right. But he's either getting up to like maybe close it out, but the back and forth between what you just mentioned, the cigarette,
has no intention of closing.
But we're hanging on his every word.
It's that thing like the game, that dating, picking girls up thing, the game where there's a thing called the false time constraint, where when you're walking past a girl, you go, hey, I got to go meet my friends real quick. And then she's like, first of all, it's psychologically you're saying like, I'm an important person. I have shit to do. Mm-hmm. I've broken my busy schedule
because I do want to take time.
And
for
you go, right. Just one last thing. But Steve Jobs used to do it. You give one last thing, and then he.
But I'm only going
to
be here for a second.
The iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, greatest invention ever. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, like one more thing, or whatever he would say. So it's like, Dave's like there's things he's told me that he did that I wouldn't even repeat because it seems. But he's just like a master. Manipulator in that
and,
way.
And the chemistry of once you guys get to know each other, obviously, I mean, that it takes a while to decide you're going to do a show together, right? Like, how much of hanging out as friends?
We hung out as friends a lot, and I remember, in 90... Well, we hung out, like, a lot, like, 92, 93. He came out here to do Robin Hood Men in Tights in 93.
Nice.
And he, like...
Oh, yeah, Bud Friedman says he, like, referred him to Mel Brooks. Maybe.
I don't believe that.
Maybe that's Dave could have just been really great.
Yeah,
Dave's
great. Like the imagine like the heat that like Hannibal and those guys have, or like Gerard or these guys, but he's 19.
Wow,
like that's the thing that people don't realize about Dave is like he was hot when he was 18. So it's like
that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it never happens. I didn't realize, but it's like now that I'm like And then I'm like, how old's Gerard? He's like 27. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly. 8 years behind.
Over the hill.
Yeah, well, it's that. And when you, like, when I first found out that Eddie Murphy, like, sold out Madison Square Garden at
when he's 22.
When he's 22.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Oh, I know. It's hilarious.
It's just you feel like such a failure.
You can't compare yourself to that.
No. Don't compare yourself to Eddie Murphy, Brad.
No, because
you'll lose every time.
Yeah, it's comparing yourself to God.
But so you'd hang out a bunch, and then at what point does somebody say we should jam together?
I was always like, hey. I was the sort of hungry hippo in that relationship where I was like, yeah, Larry David and fucking Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes. I could be your dude.
And he'd do pilots and they weren't very good. And I'd kind of be like, eh. I give him a joke. And I'd also like pitch jokes on his act, like maybe here, say this, maybe here. And a lot of them just worked.
And so he would start to take note of that.
Yeah. And the being first funny time, buddies, I told him a joke he should do, he was like, this motherfucker, yeah. And it worked. Sure. It was a good pitch, so it was mm-hmm. like, oh. And you think about one of those, it's like, I was also 19, and mm-hmm. so you think about the number of times people have given you a good tag, and right. then imagine one person gave you three good tags. You'd be like, okay.
By the way, now
you're listening to that guy.
Yeah. The existence of Chappelle's Show, you could almost say tracks back to that joke that you pitched him, because if it was shitty and didn't work,
my entire career is based on unsolicited pitches. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
So when people go, do you mind if I pitch you a joke? I'm like, no, fucking help me.
Right.
This but also like that, but like Larry Charles, who directed Borat and all these yes. movies, he Curve. Used to do that at the store in LA. He used to hang out at the Comedy Store, sell jokes, and give guys tags.
Well, shit.
There's an old saying, sorry, Brett, that like right. if you want to work somewhere, just go there and work for free, and yeah. eventually they'll hire you.
And that's essentially what I was going to say is when people say like, hey, I'm thinking about doing comedy, what should I do? I say, A, start. Just go up, do open mic nights as much as you can. But B, just hang out.
Yeah.
Be there. Be at the improv. Be there. Be at the store.
It's also good. It's good for learning how to do it. The thing I always tell people when they want to do stand-up, I say, give your friend $200 and tell them, don't give it back to me until you've done stand-up. Like that, just give your buddy, like I'd give you, Adam, $200 and say,
please,
don't give it back to me until I do stand-up. Because it's like, and then you're out $200 and the only way you can get it back. I used to do that when I first started stand-up. I was on a date with a girl and I gave her $200 and I was like, every time I smile for more than 5 seconds on stage, because I used to be fucking grim-faced.
You were just telling me about this, too, that you're special yeah. about, like, telling yourself to smile more. And you were picking shots because...
I stole shots from one of the shows and stuck them in the second show.
Just smiling
of
shots.
Smiling and laughing.
Wow.
Just because I didn't smile enough in... I had the laughs... The smiles from one show spread out over two shows. So I didn't have there were half as many laughs and smiles as I wanted. So I've literally been thinking about getting a
colonoscopy.
No, you know how like people that are into S&M, one of the guy will or the woman will have like a zapper for the guy.
What?
You can go out or you can put like your girl will put like a vibrator in her underwear sure. and then you have like the thing.
I've actually done that before.
I had
a vibrator in my underwear, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, great. I'm going to do that, I think, with stand-up and tell the person, like, hey, when I'm not moving on stage, zap me.
Oh.
And when I'm not smiling, zap me.
You're going to do that?
Yeah.
I want to be at that show.
The only way to fucking
yeah, of course.
Get better. It's like, I have a thing right. now where I have a bet with Kevin Christie that I have to read 2 books a month. And, or I have to give him $200. Like, I only respond to...
That's great.
You're forcing yourself to do it.
Yeah, because I'm so competitive, that's the only thing I respond to.
At what point did you acknowledge that, like, that's going to be your motivator? Like, because that's an awesome thing to realize. Be like, well, I'm going to push myself by making these many bets with friends.
I read it in that book, The Game. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
That if two guys would go out...
Neil Strauss, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two guys would go out and he'd say, here's the guy would give his friend $200 and say, I have to hit on 10 women or I don't get my money back. Shit. And it just forces you to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in the game is at my everything.
you read a lot, don't you?
I think I read a lot more. I read a lot for a comedian.
You also, I think, have a thirst for knowledge more so than a lot of comedians. And that's obviously, I think, why people put you on this pedestal of being like a really I don't know if prolific's the word,
right?
But definitely like smart. Like not every comic talks about. I mean, you know, obviously. Women and black dudes. There's a handful of that being discussed in your special, but you hit on a lot of stuff with a really intelligent angle that you can tell that you didn't just like Google something for the sake of the joke. You actually have a genuine interest in it.
Yeah.
Like you referenced psychology.com last night or something.
Yeah. I don't like the, what's it called? Right here. I got a bunch right here.
And it made me want to go to that website because then you talked about statistics for a joke about
Scientific
why men.
American mind.
Yeah, there it is.
And that's a magazine you get.
That's a magazine that I get. Why We Cheat.
Is that Haley Joel Osment on the front cover?
Six science-tested tips for building your resilience. How to Raise a Happy Child. There's just like a bunch of little shit.
Now, How to Raise a Happy Child. Will you read that for the sake of genuine interest?
No. Well, they just said jokes. That. I haven't read this one yet.
But like, would you read that for the sake of material or?
No, I don't read too much for material. I just read what I like. I don't.
Does that go along with the thing?
I find that when I go out of my way to look for jokes, I don't find any.
The same thing with networking for the sake of networking, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I have a Lance Armstrong joke because I'm interested in Lance Armstrong.
So funny.
And I went to see the documentary because I love the director of the documentary.
Right. The Armstrong Lie?
Yeah. The Armstrong Lie. It's a fucking awesome movie.
It's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a good transition for us with the Lance Armstrong thing. You've written jokes for Seth Meyers when he hosted the ESPYs.
When he hosted the ESPYs and when he hosted the Correspondents' Dinner.
Which is insane. How do you, like, okay, for the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because that's essentially the biggest comedy show of the year in terms of the kind of people that are watching
it. Yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I mean, I think it's. It's the only comedy show that you know the president's at. It's a presidential roast, basically. Yeah.
Right. And so, like, what's your mindset when you know that you're going to be making fun of the most powerful man on the planet?
Well, it was slightly easier for me because...
Well, you're not the one out there.
Yeah. Because when he was a senator in Illinois, he saw Charlie and Donnell at an airport. And was like, hey, man, my wife loves your show.
What?
Wow.
So I knew he was a Chappelle. I knew Michelle was a Chappelle Show fan. And
Michelle Obama loves Chappelle Show.
I think he would have been, but he didn't. He ended up saying he was also when I met him. But
she says, fuck your couch all the time.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's the fact that she likes the show makes me like it makes me feel like I have an insight to her that like. I can't explain it, but...
Well, sure. You have an idea of her sense of humor.
Yeah. So with that, it was just shit I would like to say to the president. It was just like, you're not a good president. It was basically like the joke he did about, like, I wrote a joke for Seth that was like, you can beat the entire Republican field right now, but you know who you couldn't beat? Yourself in 2008.
Oh, my God. That's a great joke.
And he's like, and I had Seth go like, oh, you should have seen it. So full of hope. And Obama's literally he'd like acted out seeing himself in 2008. Mm-hmm. So that was fucking awesome. And then shitting on Trump and.
Well, now with the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
He hated Seth Meyers. He talked about him.
Yeah.
When do you get it some sort of thing where you know Trump's going to be in the audience so you can?
I think there was a list of, but it was we actually didn't know he was going to be there. But it was like there was a list of people that were going to be there, and then there was all. But we also knew it was also just like political, so it was like make fun of Sarah Palin, make fun of the usual suspects, fun of like the websites.
Because if I remember that speech, Seth really went into Trump.
Like hammered,
he,
yeah.
Yeah, he hammered really him. Got into it. Yeah.
To where he now, like, Trump goes on Twitter, I think. And, like, I heard Seth say it on, I think, there's an interview he did with, like, Ben Stiller and, have you seen that little thing?
Yeah, I remember when he did. I never watched
that.
Nantucket Comedy Festival.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, but he was talking about how Trump still will go out of his way to bring up Seth. And so he's like, I got to have him on my show, obviously. But then Trump will give me shit. And won't do it because he'll be like, oh, he wants me to come on his show because he's that desperate for, you know.
Trump just spends everything.
He saw him the night after.
Really?
Seth saw him the night after the Correspondents' Dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Seth always says, like, Lorne taught him to just take the high road, which is – and he just went over and said, like, hey, Donald. And Trump goes, you went too far.
The first words out of his mouth.
You went too far.
Well, then that answers my next question. Do you think it's an act with Trump? I don't.
No, he's a fucking buffoon.
Yeah. He's just insane.
A buffoon. He's a narcissistic buffoon. He's a fucking complete buffoon.
By the way, buffoon is one of those great words that's in the same category for me as a bummer. Like when you tell somebody you're a bummer, that's worse than, that's like the male version of cunt, I feel like, because nobody wants to be.
I used bummer yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Isn't it a great word?
Yeah.
If you call somebody a bummer, like, it especially hurts. At a party, you're like,
oh, I referred to something as a bummer. Like, I didn't, it was no person, but I was like, that was a real bummer.
Yeah. I referred to one of my friends, I'm trying to work this into a bit, about them being a bummer couple, where I'm like, you guys are total BCs, where you show up to parties that you didn't want to come to, and all you do is talk about how you got to get out of here because I got to get up tomorrow and do a lot of shit. And I'm like, then why'd you come out? They're like, it's good. Like, every conversation, they'll just find a way to go, no, this is fun to get out, but we got to get up tomorrow.
Yeah, we got to get up. We have to go. Yeah,
cool. Thanks for bringing down this moment for me. Yeah, we got to clean up the garage. For when you're writing jokes for, at some point you have to just be selfless and go, all right, I'm... you know, not going to get the, whether it's for Chappelle's show or everything that's not a stand-up.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean,
well, that's why I only write for people I like.
Okay.
Like, I just was about to, I was going to do a show with some people, and I was like, I realized, like, oh, I don't want to, like, I didn't, like, I would be spending my entire life force trying to make somebody else funny and famous, and I'm like, I gotta really like you
right
for me to do that. Like,
would you do it for Eddie Murphy?
I would do it for Eddie. I would write Eddie's autobiography with him if he wanted me to. Like, that's how I would write fiction with Eddie.
He's
like
a god to you. He's your hero.
Yeah, he's my hero. No, like, I would do anything with Eddie. Like, no, well, I'll work with Rock, I'll work with Seth, I'll work with Schumer, like people that I fucking really, really like.
But you also
it's
have
too
it.
hard.
Right.
Yeah, it's too hard to...
Because you're forcing it at that point. And
well, it's not forcing it. It's just like, I may have enough money to last, at least to the end of the year. I'm good. no, I may have enough money to until death. So why do that to myself? Why fucking... I know I can do it.
Right.
So what's
proven
the challenge?
Track record. So
it's like, I know I absolutely know I can do it. So it's like... Do I have a special relationship with a person? You know, the thing, I like love Dave. So it's like, I was happy to do the work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I work with Chris. It's like, Chris Rock is my favorite comedian. I fucking love Chris. So it's like, I'm flattered. And at the same time, like, I enjoy dedicating my time to the person.
Is there that part of you that even still when Chris Rock likes you on Facebook or wants to work with you on something, is there still that part of you that goes, holy shit, I'm working with Chris Rock?
Yeah. I mean, now it's to the point where, like...
Because you came up with Dave, so you didn't know... he was just Dave to you.
Yeah.
But
and then,
Rock,
and then Bring the Pain came out. Chris is always my favorite. Like, I used to tell people before Bring the Pain, that dude is the best joke writer in the world.
I still think Bring the Pain is one of the best specials ever.
So... Rock watched my special. That was funny. Like, because what happened was I sent it to him 4 months before it came out or something, and he never said anything. And I was like, did this motherfucker not watch it?
Oh,
or no, I was like, did he watch it? Is he lowballing me?
Did he watch it and not like it, and he doesn't know what to say? Or
and then he told me not to name it Women and Black Dudes. And then I said, my special is coming out, Women and Black Dudes is coming out, and he wrote, you called it that on Facebook.
Do you have a picture of that?
Yep.
That's a screenshot, that one.
You called it that, and then I said, yeah, I did, Chris. I disobeyed you, and he wrote, I thought you had a chance. he's just a fucking asshole. He's like a mean older brother. So, but I still am flattered and excited, and I don't want to be fucking corny around him. You know what I mean? More than anything, it's like the people you work with, you have to try to impress them. You have to want to try to impress them. I don't want to be corny around Seth or, you know, like, just, well, like Seth, I kind of don't care, but.
Yeah, you're
Seth,
friends, but you have to, once you get involved professionally, you have to be aware. I think I heard you say this on another thing and sorry to reference
no
the podcast, but about being cognizant of, like, I think it was on Chappelle's show you were talking about, like, whether it was a director or well, you're directing it, but like somebody you're working with that you have to, like, people can fire you over stupid things, so you have to.
Oh yeah, no. When you're, that's the, with Dave, with Chris, with, well, with Dave back then, yeah. Like, I was worried. I mean, it's when you're working on a show with people, it's personal, but at the same time, it's professional. So it is at heart. Like I said on Barry's podcast, like,
yeah,
when you are the EP of a show like Letterman, when it's like a so-and-so show, Tosh, Chelsea mm-hmm. Handler, Leno, Letterman, et sure. cetera, you have to, you are in constant fear of the star when you're the EP.
Sure.
Unless you created the show, and even after 3 years, they'll fire you.
Exactly. And
you can create the show, bring someone in, and they, what happens is they get so powerful, they just go like, fuck out of here. Because I know people that happen to.
Sure. And now at the same time, do you understand that? Because it's their name on the marquee.
I understand it.
Yeah.
It doesn't, again, that's another one of those things of like, thankfully I have enough money that I don't want to put myself through that. Like it's taxing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's personally taxing to worry about another human being's feelings above your own. It's like being a fucking Secret Service man and you have to write their policy.
So when you're writing jokes for the ESPYs, you're not concerned about these athletes' feelings being like,
yeah. I mean, the ESPYs, I don't even, like, I'm just trying to get, like, just trying to write shit for Seth so Seth looks good. But
I heard they have no
ESPN
sense of humor.
ESPN is worried about their feelings and to the point of, like, stripping them, like, making them not good at all. I had a joke.
So no athletes came after Seth after some of his...
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Somebody told me my childhood hero, King Griffey Jr., does not, like...
When Norm MacDonald hosted Watch It on YouTube, he's, mm-hmm. he says that... he says that Tiger Woods is one of the best five black golfers... You know, on the PGA Tour. Just shit like...
Okay.
Just right. like funny, broad, ironic jokes. You know, you won the Heisman and they can't take that away from you unless you kill your wife and a waiter. and they cut Great to line. Ken Griffey just yeah. fucking like upset. And it's like, you're fucking morons for cutting to him.
Yeah.
So they're... The ESPN... The other thing, the ESPYs gets like no one watches the ESPYs. It's like... It's
well,
sort of,
because it's like it's an award show for sports when the
they've
award
already
is,
won the award.
Yeah, you win. Like, yeah. you win the championship. That's the award.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want to go back to this Eddie thing real quick. Do you like 10 more minutes? Is that cool?
Yeah, of course.
10, 15? Yeah.
Yeah.
You were telling me last night at your show, which, by the way, every Sunday, right?
Every Westside Sunday Comedy night Theater. Santa Monica at the West Side Comedy Theater.
9 o'clock. See Neil and friends work out new material. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Rock took a shot at me last night about it on Facebook. Because he's like, why do you put "and friends"?
What a great thing to have small talk about.
No, it's like, I literally want to say, like, get out of here.
Dude, read
just
something.
Leave us alone. Yeah. We're having a sleepover, you moron. Get out of here. You're too famous.
He is the older brother that you love but still likes to come down and say, you're stupid.
Yeah. Like, you're fucking idiot. Why are you hitting yourself?
But real quick, if you are listening and you are on the West Side, there's really no comedy shows. And
no.
That being said, it's also one of the best shows in Los Angeles because not only are you there every time, you bring only good comics and you know a lot of people, so big dudes drop in and to work out shit for, like, Damon Wayans was there a couple weeks ago just to work out before.
Dave's done it.
Has he really?
Yeah.
They must have lost their minds.
No one was there. It was like fucking 20 people.
Wow.
Jesus. And they have that moment.
We ended up just talking the whole time on stage. It was interesting.
Oh, you and Dave?
I'm sure it was cool for people that if they were fans.
Of course. Okay. So you were telling me last night that a friend of ours and you went over to Eddie's place with Dave.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, describing his house, sounds like the type of house that you would have if you were
Eddie
Murphy.
There is a gated community at the top of Beverly Hills called mm-hmm. Beverly...
Murphy.
Exactly.
Beverly Eddie. That's it.
I can't remember what it's called. Beverly. It's like... It's not Beverly Glen. It's something...
Do you have his exact address?
No. and there is a... It's a gated community, so there's a mm-hmm. guardhouse. The guardhouse is nicer than most houses.
Okay.
So there's a guardhouse to get even into the neighborhood, and then
it's like
then there's all
feet.
The houses are gated.
Okay.
And it's like Denzel and Rod Stewart, just mm-hmm. all rich.
Judith Light, yeah. Shaq.
Exactly.
Pretty sure Dan Glover.
Barry Bonds was up there.
That's right. Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I talked to him. I saw a picture. Arsenio tweeted a picture of Barry Bonds... whatever, at Eddie's or something. And I was like, so then I met Barry Bonds and I was like, hey man, you're friends with Eddie and Arsenio, right? And he's like, oh yeah, I I hang out at Eddie's all the time.
What is that voice?
That's Barry Bonds. He's got a very high voice.
He talks like a lady, kind of.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Watch him do an interview. It's hilarious.
What did you guys talk about?
It was excellent. It was. I'm friends with Alan Thicke.
No, that's incredible.
He was in The Goods. I put him in The Goods. So we're friends. And the thing with Alan is, like, he's come to the store a bunch of times to watch me. Whenever I do TV sets, he calls me. He's like, Neil, Alan Thicke here. Loved you on Arsenio.
I love that he says his name.
Alan Thicke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan Thicke here.
He's got one of the best voices of all
time.
Mike.
So Alan Thicke has a TV show, a reality show about him and his wife that I think it airs in Canada. Now it's going to air here. Mm-hmm. And it was his birthday. So we had me, Chris Titus, and Harland roast him.
Okay.
But it was in the valley, in the upstairs of an Italian restaurant for like Alan and like his
six of his buddies,
his friends, like, and yeah, like
a show
like
that could be done 40, in a theater.
Yeah, like 40, like just 40 people, like Barry Bonds and just a bunch of weird trophy wives and shit. So me, Titus, and Harland, it was like a Neapolitan of eating it. Three different ways to eat it. We showed you everything. I was mean.
Harland was goofy.
Mean and bombed.
Harland was goofy.
Goofy
and Titus
bombed.
Was like neurotic and...
Neurotic and bombed.
Yeah.
Great.
And a lady got mad because Robin Thicke wasn't there. And I was like, what kind of fucking birthday party is it if your son... like,
right.
If your son won't come, something. And someone was like... Robin loves Al. I was like, lady, okay. Jesus.
Yeah, eat your meatballs and
so
shut
afterwards.
Well, I mean, you're at a rich party and they don't have to ham it up for the cameras.
What do you want me to do? Like, I don't know the tone of I didn't know where I was coming.
Did you start straying off and just like roasting the menu? Be like, give me four raviolis.
I don't even remember. It was like, whatever.
So
I did like a blurred lines.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
sure.
is how Alan describes the 80s. Bang. That was my big closer.
That's a good one.
Didn't do that well, by the way.
But that's a great joke.
Right. But no, I know it's a good joke.
Yeah.
Didn't do that well.
Wow.
Because they hated me by that point.
Any Kirk Cameron, like, crazy Christian jokes?
No. Because I'm sure Alan's like, Kirk's my friend.
Yeah. And my
so,
TV
anyways,
son.
So, Barry Bonds is there. So, I was like, hey, man, you're friends with Eddie and Arsenio, right? And he's like, yeah, I go to Eddie's all the time.
I love this voice, dude.
And Barry Bonds has lost, like, 35 pounds. And he was telling me, like, because he rides... He cycles like 50 miles a day.
Jesus.
And also stopped doing steroids. So
it helps.
His head was like markedly smaller. I was like, yeah. I actually wanted to make a joke in the roast. Like, Barry, it's good to see the brain swelling has gone down. So we're talking, and I was like, there was a thing on Real Sports about a pitch about a guy who had tons of reconstructive surgery on his arm, and then went to this guy has a new pitching thing.
The brand new pitching motion. I saw that. Yeah.
So I said to Barry Bonds, I was like, do you see that Real Sports? Mm-hmm. As I'm saying it, I realized that Real Sports did more pieces about him on steroids than any show in the world.
Right.
So he's like, no, I don't watch it. And, but there was like a tone. And I was like, so we're talking about, and I go, there's also a thing where I read an article where good hitters have incredibly good vision. All of them to a man, like fucking Joe DiMaggio, just
Ted
like
William, yeah, Tony, Ted Tony all Gwynn,
this guy, crazy good vision. Yeah. So I go, Barry, do you have good eyesight? And he goes, yeah. In fact, now it's like blurry to me, and I'll go to the eye doctor, and he'll say it's 20/20, meaning his vision, what he considers blurry, everybody else considers perfect.
Wow.
Holy shit.
So we're talking and he goes, but that's not why I was a good hitter. He goes, I was a good hitter because I would watch a lot of tape and I knew guys' tendencies and I knew what they were going to throw. And I go, now, is that something is that innate or is that something you could tell your teammates? And he goes, I could have told them. I didn't.
What?
Wow.
The fuck?
And I wanted like confetti to drop.
Right.
Thank you, Barry Bonds.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure you were still yourself.
Yes. Thanks for confirming everything that Jeff Kent said.
Thank you very much. It was the best. So
I could have told them, but I didn't.
Somewhere Jeff
I didn't,
Kent
and he's
is
like,
really
and then
pissed
that's
right
when
now.
They say I'm a bad teammate.
Mm.
so
So yeah, so me and Dave went to Eddie's and
bowling alley,
bowling,
arcade.
Like we go in there and it's like a mansion, and you go downstairs. Eddie's downstairs bowling, so we go down there, and he's literally just bowling in a two-person bowling alley with his girlfriend.
And you said with the machine, with the animation of the turkey.
Yeah, like the two. He's got the little key. He's got the monitor. It's like a bowling alley.
He lives in a Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, basically. And there is a an arcade.
Well, of course,
candy
there is.
And all kinds of shit.
What? With tickets and a prize center?
Yeah. Nachos. He makes fresh nachos every day. He's a nacho machine.
You know what?
It's fucking gross, but
why wouldn't you have a, why wouldn't you have a nacho machine?
Yeah, exactly.
I once went to one of those prize centers and spent, I think, like $95 in quarters on NBA Jam, got 6,000 tickets, which bought me 2 Now and Laters and a laminated photo of Montel Jordan.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Money well spent, in my opinion.
So what happened? Okay, so then we hang out. We start bowling. Eddie types our names into the machine. Spell my name correctly, by the way. N-E-A-L, which is not easy for anyone.
Respect.
Eddie's my friend. he really, like, we're, I consider him, I mean, whatever. Like, I love that dude.
Now, up until this point, I mean, you've met him before.
Yeah, so. I met him before. We've talked about doing shit. Like, we've, you know, like.
And you know his brother well.
I know his brother well. It's like, if you're friends with somebody's brother.
You know them.
You know them. Yep. Like, it's like, so.
Does he think he was depicted well in the Rick James?
Oh, yeah. We watched it. We showed it to him before it aired. And he was like, he's like.
That's a nerve-wracking moment.
Yeah.
He said, I believe the exact quote. Oh, it was incredibly nerve-wracking. And he said, the quote was, you niggas deserve an Emmy for this shit.
Oh, my God.
Done.
That's the best shit ever.
And how relieved were you when he said that sentence?
That
just
was
how stunning.
I was like, it was like my eyes were watering. It was like, my face went hot.
It's God acknowledging your existence.
Yeah, and he wanted to watch it again. That was good.
That's great. So you're hanging out, you're talking comedy, and just
So we're at his house, and me and Dave were straight up. Here's the other thing. He loves weed, and when you've got as much money as him, and you're a germaphobe, which he's not like huge. He's just like everyone gets their own joint.
Right.
Now I don't smoke weed.
It's a good host.
Dave had like 3 hits of his joint, of his own joint, and. Was fucking gone. So that speaks to, and Eddie was smoking him like cigarettes. So
he likes him some weed.
He loves
of the strongest shit.
Yeah. So Dave stoned, and I'm just like peppering him with questions. And I was like, so I'm like, so what would you do? Like, how would you work bits out? And I was like, would you go to the strip and like have a little bit and then bomb with some? And he goes, I told Adam this last night. He goes, no, nigga, there was no bombing.
there was no bombing.
Yeah, he goes, he's like, I bombed like twice.
Jeez.
Which is probably true.
Yeah, he's not lying.
If you're doing that at 22 at the Garden and you are on SNL, you just
He's like little parts of work and then I just expand it, try a little bit more and whatever. That's how like the barbecue, all that shit.
He's like, I've never bombed. You're like, have you seen Pluto Nash?
Yeah. So then me and Dave are like, dude, you got to do stand-up again. And Dave's like, come on, Eddie. Rodney did it till he was like 80. And Eddie goes...
Because you never got to see him live, right?
He goes, Dave, I'm not Rodney. He goes, you guys, I'm not Rodney. He goes, I'm with Chaplin and them. We're just like, okay.
Oh, all right.
It's one of those things where you kind of go like, I can't argue with you.
Yeah.
You are with Chaplin. You are one of the greatest comedy movie stars of all time.
Exactly.
And you were saying that like, because you said you or Dave was berating him about when to see him live.
Yeah. Dave was like, come on, man. You're my favorite comedian. I've never got to see you live. And Eddie goes like, so what? He goes, people have never gotten to see Kareem live.
Yeah.
Oh, well, watch tape. And he goes,
tape on him.
He goes, if you want to see Kareem now, you have to watch him on that diving show, Splash. Literally, Eddie said that. And later on, again, peppering.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a great moment that I wish I could have filmed it. It's so poetic and weird, though. Dave's like, come on, man, you got to do stand-up. And we're just standing. It's me, Dave, and Eddie.
on Eddie's patio with like an open fire pit and giant TV screens.
You step back from that for a minute, right? To just go.
Yeah, but Dave went out first because he was smoking. Mm. And then so Dave goes, come on, you got to. And he goes, you got to do something. And Eddie looks at Dave and goes, what about you, nigga? What about you?
And shit just got real.
Yeah, and Dave looks at me. I go, he got you there, Dave.
Yeah.
And it was like, and Dave's like, fine, I'll do stand. Dave goes, I'll do a movie if you do stand up at the premiere. It was just like a fucking
stone.
Yeah,
sure.
It's
and like then you're like, whoa, somebody, record that. Yeah, yeah, someone write this down. Please.
But it was like this great, like, oh. And then Eddie said, Eddie goes, Neil, I figured out what this is. Basically, I'm Jimi Hendrix, and Dave's trying to get me to play guitar again, mm-hmm. and I'm on some like, no, I'm on some Dr. Doolittle 2 shit. Like, he just likes making money.
Yeah, genuinely, like those movies, like, yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't watch this movie, but he does it. He gets $20 million.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he...
Nobody can put themselves in that shoes of saying no to something like that.
Well, it's also like, as I've explained to other people, it's like you know how many scripts Eddie gets that are not very many. Like you know what I mean? Like there aren't very many parts written for a 50-year-old black dude who's also, what's he going to do? Play a cop?
You're right. He's played everything.
So many cops.
Yeah, exactly.
And what can
and,
he play?
And the iconic
and the
cop
other thing,
role,
and then
so,
he
yeah.
did like Dreamgirls, and he's like,
so good.
He's like, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. He goes, a lot of work. I don't get any money, and then I get nominated for a prize and lose. So,
why?
What's the point?
Yeah. Wow.
Like what? What's the point? Literally, he said that about playing Pryor. He's like, I got to learn. I got to lose weight. I got to, and then I get literally get nominated. I got to cry in public and shit. I don't remember if he said that, but
he's going over.
No, but he's like, for what? For what? Like, for, wow. So what? But that's what I love about him. It's like when people go like, when he lost the Oscars, he walked out and people were like saying, it's like, no, he'd rather be home
right.
smoking weed and strumming an acoustic guitar. And like, that's what he, and watching television.
Yeah, and you've seen his house. Yeah, you'd rather be there
leave.
Than in the Kodak
like,
Theater.
I'm
yeah.
fucking, I don't, I literally have... no money compared to him, mm-hmm. and I don't like to leave my house. Like I don't do shit, and I don't, and I, you know what I mean. Like
yes.
I won't write. It's like I get it.
Mm-hmm.
He made $35 million for Shrek 3.
Jesus Christ!
And he records it in his basement.
No, he doesn't. He has a studio.
Yeah,
because he's making music too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They probably just brought the.
Yeah, why would you?
So when people are like, why would it, for what? He's like, I already did. He's like, I did 30 movies.
Yeah. And you said when you asked him about doing stand-up, like, inquired if he would, like, go to the clubs and work out, but he just, like...
It's impossible.
Because 20, what, he hasn't done it in 20 years or something, right?
It'll be 30 soon.
Jeez. Yeah, and the same thing you said last night, like, why would he said to you, like, why would I... Because
like,
you don't think he's going to,
for
right?
what?
Yeah,
it's like, he's already
proven
time,
he could do
time,
it.
He was like, he's like, I have an idea, how about... I make a movie. It'll you come in, you pay, you sit down, you watch the movie, and then I disappear, and you go home.
And you keep wondering what I'm gonna do next.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm a fucking still a mystery, and still he. Oh, here's the other thing. I go, well, aren't you competitive? And he's like, he goes, yeah, but I also know that no one's put it down the way I did. So
fuck, that's awesome.
Yeah,
God,
it's like
that's awesome.
He's like,
and
I
it's real
know
too.
What I know what I did. So
yeah.
He's like, no one has put it down as hard as I did. So
conquered.
Like,
you're good.
What, why, all he can do is lose. He can either tie himself
yeah.
mm-hmm. or lose. The best he can get is like, you're as funny as you used to be. He's like, I know I'm
yeah.
funny as I used
you're,
to be.
Yeah, you're as funny as you.
Yeah, it's like,
you can't
he
get better.
Said fucking, you got to watch fucking Kareem on Splash. It's like, no, he's still funny. There's not mm-hmm. a problem.
I love, too, that
the
he's
the best
not-
was yeah. he had a picture of Obama, him meeting Obama, and he's like, he goes, yeah, Obama was, like, real nice to me. And you see the picture. Obama looks like he's meeting a god.
That's so
yeah.
awesome.
And Eddie's just like, hey, man. And it's like,
hey, man,
yeah,
you're president.
Dude.
Why not?
It's like Obama and Michelle's first date was going to see Do the Right Thing. Eddie Murphy and Obama are the same age.
Oh, so.
Obama was yeah. living in Hawaii, was going to Columbia when Eddie did the fucking Mr. White sketch on SNL. It's like, no. You're the president. You are a Barack Obama to Barack Obama. That's how I felt when I met Obama. I was like, yeah, I've already met Eddie Murphy.
What does Eddie think of Dave? Like, as he was coming up, I mean, he loved Dave.
He was actually, this goes back to the club. When Dave was doing Nutty Professor, Eddie told him.
The scream scene.
Eddie's like, yo, man, you've got a good your act is real visual. He's like, you could write movies. He goes, you should write a movie. And then we wrote Half Baked. Like, that's one of those things.
Eddie Murphy propelled the writing of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, he told Dave, you should write a movie.
Well, that, when your hero tells you to do something, you're like, oh, crap, my hero.
Yeah, like, I guess I should.
Yeah, I should probably.
Eddie's the best black screenwriter ever. Like, he wrote
Coming to America
mm-hmm. and Boomerang, which people sleep on, but it's like, Boomerang's a fucking great movie.
Yep. Yeah.
But he looked at Dave, though, and does he look at him now, do you think, as, like, kind of...
What was hilarious is, like, that night we were just, like, two annoying kids. Dave was, like, a stoned and annoying. He was just fucking annoying. It was hilarious. Oh, this is the best. At one point, this is, like, such a... This is where Eddie channeled rock for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I go, Eddie, how long were you doing stand-up? I was doing stand-up, like, for 7 years when I did... Delirious or Raw or something, just something unbelievable.
Yeah,
right.
And he goes, Neil, how long have you been doing it? I was like, 6 years. And he goes, oh, that's why you're asking me all those fucking questions. And I wanted to go, like, shut up.
Yeah, but
you fucking, yeah, it's like, I'm not going to not ask you questions.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to, you're fucking Eddie Murphy. Like, I'm not, you're, I know you, we're cool, like, we hug and all that shit, but like, I still want to know.
Right.
I still want to know. Like, I want to know for myself.
Different scale. Like, that's how I feel with Chappelle's Show with you right now.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I would want to talk about, like, it's tough to navigate through this podcast without just going back to it every 5 minutes.
I get that. Like, how does that make you?
I mean, is that annoying or is that
fun? No. It's like getting complimented is never annoying.
Right. And to know that your work holds up.
Whether it holds up or not, it's like Lauren always says, the your favorite SNL cast is the one that was on when you were in high school.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like,
he's right.
It's like college for Chappelle Show.
But like SNL for me,
that's our age group right there.
Like, you know what's funny, and I'm gonna wrap this up in a few. But like your influences, like for me, sketch has always been Eddie Murphy Delirious was the first stand-up I saw, if you don't count a Sinbad special that my dad showed me when he sucked the McDonald's straw and got the vein popping out of his forehead.
Sure.
Remember that? And then I got the host for Sinbad in Ontario once, and my dad drove over, and it was like the greatest day of his life.
That's awesome.
Because he was like, wow, I'm watching my son perform with the comic that I showed.
Watching my son eat shit in front of a bunch of middle-aged black people.
Yeah, and I had to be clean, and I was like four and a half years in, and I was like... pulling up jokes.
That's where you're like going, you're scanning your act. You're like, you have a 15 second delay on your act.
Yeah.
You're like, do I say fuck coming up?
Dude. Oh, and that's the worst when you realize that you do, but you're already midway through the joke.
Yeah. And you're like, I don't think I can't figure out a better word than fuck
in the next 10 seconds.
And you're like, all right. And then you're like, I guess I got to talk to the manager after this.
Yeah.
But like Living Color was my shit for elementary school, middle school, as far as like what made me go, oh, comedy is the best thing ever. And then it was SNL in high school and then Chappelle's Show in college. And so like, what was it for you? Like when you were,
SNL when I was real little. Like, this is a creepy thing. I don't know if I've ever said this on a podcast.
Nice.
I said when Eddie was on SNL, I was like 8 or 9 and I used to stay up to watch it. And then when my parents would pull in the driveway, I'd run up and pretend to be asleep. And at one point I said to my mom, you got to let me stay up to watch SNL. It's important. And I was like 9, which is like creepy. As I was saying, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. That's really creepy.
It was,
That you knew this was maybe.
When I saw sketch comedy, I couldn't believe it. I literally was like, wait, what do they do? Like, they do a shorter version of a thing and make fun of it.
A 3-minute movie?
Yeah, it's like the best. Like, that, like, so like the Eddie shit, the Eddie years of SNL, and then the Billy Crystal, Christopher Guest, Harry Shearer years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of stopped watching just because I was like in high school and fucking partying my dick off. Right.
Yeah,
shit
to do. So.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
because you don't drink or smoke now.
No, I used to drink all the time in high school.
Were you fun?
And then
were you fun
once
drunk?
I moved out of my parents' house, I've gotten drunk three times. I really just didn't want to be with my parents.
Well, part of this podcast is we drink a bottle of whiskey at the end.
What, you guys?
Were you a fun drunk?
So,
real quick?
So then, and then I moved out here when I was like Stiller Show.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller Show. There you go.
Ben Stiller Show when I dropped out of school. Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Show.
Yeah.
Mr. Show's
and then,
classic.
And then after that, it was like, but then pretty much after that, it was like Chappelle Show. Well, like then it then just started doing Chappelle Show.
And now, like.
But I always loved SNL, dude. Like, yeah. Like I love Will and Molly Shannon and Sherry O'Terry.
Well, the things you would steal from, like the way that people, you know, actors will say, you know, steal from certain people to, like, for your, I mean, from what shows would, when you got on Chappelle Show, you're like, oh yeah, I remember loving this. I mean, you guys definitely like created a new
well, the,
avenue.
The, yeah, like in terms of just like, I don't really know.
Because the live shit with video, everyone tries to do now. And you guys, I feel like, were the originators of that formula.
But somebody reminded me that Robert Townsend had a show called Townsend Television where he did that.
Wow.
But I don't remember it. Although Robert Townsend is a big influence. Like,
sure.
Like Hollywood Shuffle is a fucking awesome movie. I remember we were writing Half Baked. We had to turn in the next day, and Hollywood Shuffle was on, and me and Dave were watching. I was like, "Dude, we got to turn this off because we're never going to finish."
Yeah.
And I remember, like a month later, he's like, "You know what? If you hadn't turned it off, we never would have finished."
So like that.
So yeah, like Mr. Show was a big. I used to go to tapings of Mr. Show. So yeah, like that shit. But but having said that, Mr. Show wasn't. Chappelle Show wasn't really like Mr. Show.
Right.
I mean, how does it feel to know that the way you look at SNL, the way you look at Mr. Show and Living Color, like you helped create that moment now for a whole new generation? You have.
Honestly, it doesn't
that moment in pop culture.
Feel like much because it's like when someone said, like, for instance, I don't know how many downloads you guys get, but
a lot.
Someone says, like, all right, Adam, take it easy.
You may get recognized on the street from this podcast. Just saying.
If someone says, like, can you believe you've had 70,000 downloads?
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, like, yeah, I don't know. The
cool.
Experience, you never, I'm not aware of anyone listening to this as we're doing it. So it's identical to that. When people go, like, can you believe you sold that many DVDs? I'm like, only one time did I see, I was, like, parking or something. And I was like, what is that? And someone had like a bay window and they were watching the show. And I was like, I just like looked at them watching Chappelle Show on the street. And I was like, I shouldn't look at this.
It's weird, right?
It's a weird, fucking weird.
Norman Rockwell
like,
moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A guy on a plane, again, a much smaller scale, was watching The Heat and he was laughing really loud. And he woke me up from sleeping, and then he looks at me and goes, sorry, man, this is fucking hilarious. The guy probably in his, like, mid-60s, and was about to come up on my first scene, and so I was just like, all right, I'm just going to fucking, like, have a moment here. So I wait, and then I just, like, kind of nudge him, and I look over, and I go, and I point to the TV, and then he looks at me, and he goes, huh? And then he just fucking took off his headphones and lost his mind.
Oh, but he went, like, he was
because then I go, that's me. Yeah. And he was like, what the fuck? And he was like, oh, shit.
What are you doing in coach?
I fucking knew it. But that was... You know, and then I just went back to sleep. But
well, you know what? Did you regret doing it? What I always
no,
because
his face was priceless.
Embarrassing. I always find it. I remember one time I said, like, when I would get recognized a little bit from Chappelle Show, and I remember saying to Dave, like, I was like, it's so embarrassing, like at my level to get embarrassed and to get recognized. And he goes, it's embarrassing at every level.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's fucking weird. It's not human beings aren't supposed to be famous. Like we're not built for fame.
It's not built to our mindset.
We're not equipped for it. Literally, that's why fame wins. It makes everybody insane. I mean, everybody that gets super famous.
Is it crazy to think that people? I mean, saying that like before all the social media and internet stuff, like people were still losing their minds from fame, but now it's.
Well, now everyone's a little famous. Everyone wants to be. Everyone is admitting that they want to be famous.
Yeah.
Even though if they're like, you know, someone, there are people on Yelp who think they're going to get famous from their Yelp reviews.
I'm the number one Yelp reviewer on the Upper East Side.
I'm certified, bro.
That Alan Thicke roast at the Italian restaurant was shitty.
Yeah. Neil Alan Thicke calling. Was Alan came to see me at the store. And Argus Hamilton was on before me, and he goes, and Al goes, boy, Argus has been doing Argus for a while, huh?
Wow.
What a great line.
Yo, you have and John Legend comes to see you at the factory.
John's a buddy of mine. From actually knew him. He did Chappelle's Show. We were cool. And then I reconnected with him kind of through his wife. His wife, him and his wife were at the correspondence dinner.
Nice.
And I kind of reconnected with him. And wow. Chrissy is such a cool...
His wife, right?
Yeah, she's like a model and shit.
Yeah. Has he done the champs?
Yeah. He's done it. And
which, by the way, is your podcast with Moshe Kasher, which is great.
Ask me how many downloads we got.
How many downloads?
A lot.
There you go. Why do you only have black comedians on?
We only have black people because I know a lot of black people and that they just won't be on any other podcast. They literally go on yours. Like, they won't do... They don't know...
Yeah, Wayne Brady and Arsenio, I don't think, have done podcasts other than yours, right?
Arsenio did...
Maybe like a WTF or something?
No, he didn't do WTF. Mm-hmm. He did Corollas because they were on...
Oh, the Celebrity Apprentice together.
Yeah,
right, together. Right.
But yeah, like there's tons of Blake Griffin's done it a couple times. He's not going to do any... I mean, I think he... But like there's people that... Yeah, like I just know a lot of black dudes that other podcasters don't know.
Where does that stem from? You talk about it in your act a little bit.
I don't know where it stems from.
Your fascination with the culture or whatever?
Like I'm not even like... I like it and relate to it. I'm not like, what are those people doing? This is fascinating. Like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not hard for me to be buddy friends with black dudes. Like, I don't, like Barry said the thing about me and Dave were like, when there was no color, it was like, we were like clear. Like there was no pigment. Like it just never occurred. I don't know. Like,
and you can
not,
tell because you can't tell who wrote what sketches. You don't know if Dave wrote one or if you wrote one.
Yeah. And that's, but I don't, it's like I'm friends with, like, Donnell is fucking funny to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're funny in the same way. And I don't, so I can't explain it. Like, I also don't understand how people in comedy aren't friends with 1,000 black dudes, because it's like, I would say it's like being in fashion and not being friends with gay dudes. It's like they're the best.
They're good at it.
Yeah, like why would you not? And also like they're, yeah, it's like I just don't get it.
They're the coolest.
Well, they're the coolest, but it's also just like they're fucking funny and nice and cool and
so
interesting.
Why wouldn't you want to be friends with them?
But a lot of them, it's just like an opportunities.
Yeah,
and most people aren't friends.
Yeah, I don't even think you seek it out necessarily. It just sort of
happens. At this point, they've come to me.
There you go.
Neil Brennan, gatherer of black people.
Follow me.
That is your next album right there. They all love go to Santa Monica.
Yeah. Before we close out, and I'm sure people ask you this all the time, but it's a genuine curiosity of mine. I mean, doesn't have to be a one sketch, because I'm sure that question gets asked a lot, but even a moment, or like I've heard you say to me at the Santa Monica show about like great feelings of like when you and Dave, the pressures of needing to come up with a sketch.
Yeah.
And, like there was a great feeling.
The one the one that's the best one of those is that legal system one where Dave's like on jury, it's called jury selection.
Yeah.
It's like late in the second season.
Yeah.
Because we were in St. Thomas. We would like go to St. Thomas to write sketches. It was just like one time we went to Rome. It's a long story.
Long story.
But at that point we were like, didn't like each other. So we just kind of went to Rome and argued the whole time. but we were like, it was like metal on metal. Like we got a fucking, there was a Michael Jackson article in Vanity Fair. And I was like, and I read it. It was like, all right, here you go. Your boy's fucking, it's all here. Mm-hmm. And he read it and was like, nope. And I was like, you don't fucking think any black. And I was like, and we both looked at each other like,
ah, this is a sketch.
And it was we needed a sketch badly. And it was like, oh, thank God. I mean, that's the thing. Goes back to Eddie. I one time asked him, with one of my fucking questions, when he was on SNL, did he feel like he was just dominating? And he's like, no, man, I was just like in the trenches.
Fuck.
And I go, this is the most telling thing about what it's like to be somebody versus looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
I go, when did it feel like you got out of the trenches? And he was like, I don't know, like after Nutty Professor.
Like, wow.
What? Yeah, yeah, so you just go like, it's not like...
So even when he's making, even when he does the scene
48 hours,
where right when he hits
Beverly
camera...
Beverly Hills Cop,
like,
fucking 48 hours, he said, I go, what was, I asked him, I was like, what was the first thing you shot?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, we shot the thing where I'm waiting in the car and I open the door and hit the dude. That was the first day of shooting. And he goes, I remember they had me in like one of those honey wagons that they put extras in. And
holy shit.
And Dave was like, were you pissed? And he goes, it's like, pissed? No, man, it was like the greatest summer of my life.
Wow.
It's like fucking living in L.A. He goes, I had a convertible. It's like I was getting per diem.
Done. Even Trading Places, nobody talks about. That's one of my favorites.
I don't like Trading Places.
Why not?
Everybody else. Because it's a shitty story.
Of just...
Yeah.
He's just so good in it.
The ending doesn't make sense either.
Yeah. $1. So that was your favorite.
Yeah, the legal system.
But like,
just because it meant it was like, it's funny as shit.
Yeah.
And it's got one of my favorite jokes in it, which is like something about Michael Jackson. Dave goes, he made Thriller. Thriller.
Just pause.
Like that, and that's
enough,
like,
said.
That's it. Like, yeah, that's the whole defense. It's right. Like, that's really Black people's only defense against Michael Jackson. It's like, he don't you see, he couldn't have,
because he made Thriller.
He couldn't have.
That to me is like kind of a bummer, like why the show is maybe not still on, because the amount of social commentary you guys did, as well as like John Mayer then pops, like once it started to become cool, like I can only imagine the things you guys would tackle now, and the amount and the people, dude, Obama would probably be in a sketch.
I don't doubt that for a second.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know.
You never think about this.
I had
stuff,
a fucking,
though, right?
No, I have a hilarious sketch for
Obama.
But it's not, it's an Obama sketch. It would basically be like the Secret Service doesn't know anything about Black culture. So they're telling Obama about all the threats.
Right.
But it's all Black threats. So they're like, so-and-so said he's going to come and split your wig. We're not taking it seriously. And Obama's like, wait a second. What did he say? He said, get my track shoes. I'm in real trouble. And they're like, no, he said.
He's the only one that can decode it.
He said, yeah, exactly. He's like, no. Say it again.
That's real. Bust a cap.
He said he's going to bust a cap. That's on his mother. And they're like, we're not. And he's like, no, you need to take this very seriously.
It'll be a great sketch. Yeah. Neil, thank you so much for...
Yeah, my pleasure. I got pee, guys.
Follow on Twitter at Neil Brennan.
In my super cool bathroom.
It's the best. Follow Neil Brennan on Twitter, at Neil Brennan. Watch his special...
Women and Black Dudes.
Yeah. Women and Black
Dudes.
Comedy
Central.
He performs Comedy Store Laugh Factory. And on the road, neilbrennan.com?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, that's the website for all the tour dates. Neil's taking a pee. We're going to take this moment to... I'm just bask in the glory of the giant island heads that are hanging on the wall. Thanks, Neil. I was hoping he'd scream from the bathroom.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, Slicinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here, and it's funny. And I love you.